Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Hello, everybody. I am delighted to introduce you to season 5 of my podcast series. Season 5 is especially for my nonprofit friends to help you hone your fundraising pitch. I did a live training that was 8 months long every first Monday of the month, and it was super popular with my email subscribers. I had such wonderful interactions from nonprofits, and in each training, I focused in on one of 7 key elements that I think you need, my nonprofit friend, to be successful in honing your fundraising pitch. So what I'm doing now for this season 5 of the podcast is I've heavily edited the live training, and I also offer some of my own special interjections in the middle of the training to guide you and point you in the direction of even more resources, so that you in the podcast universe, in the nonprofits who attend to listen to my podcast, you can get the benefit of my training. If you're a donor that likes to listen to my podcasts, please share this with your favorite nonprofit, because this training is geared to help them raise even more money. And I'm sure as a donor, you want your nonprofits to succeed. And a couple things to note as you listen to this live training, I do interject occasionally because sometimes the video version of a live training doesn't translate that well into the podcast world. And so I interject to sort of help guide the conversation. I also have wonderful assistants that help me. And so sometimes you'll hear a voice that you don't recognize, and that is my assistant coming in to make sure that the questions that the audience are asking is coming into the flow of the training and the conversation.
I'm going to help you learn to unlock a donor's mind so your cause becomes theirs. That's my goal for you. I work for donors and funders, and I help them give away donations and grants. I've helped them give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. And in this job, I get pitched by nonprofits, by hundreds of nonprofits. And I see when a nonprofit does a great job, I love that. But more often than not, I see nonprofits making mistakes when they fundraise. And I don't want that to be you. I want you to succeed, my nonprofit friend. That's why I took a lot of time to create my pitch mastery workshops and courses, so that you can come to the front of the line and not make mistakes and not leave money on the table. So here we go. All right. So what you're going to learn today are the 7 elements to include in a pitch. And I just do want to remind you that with each of these 7 elements, we're going to go through all of them high level today. And then for the next 7 months, each Monday, for the first Monday of the month, I'm going to dig deeply into each one of those elements to really help you think through how to make it work. The 7 elements to include in a pitch. Here's the summary of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how you can define your success, your problem, the role you serve, how you can leverage that funder's money, how you can scale the work that that funder is supporting you to do, how you can talk about your collaborators so that you all can raise more money together, and how you can talk about a budget that's effective so that you can raise the most money possible with the amount, with the ask that you have. All right, let's get into it today. First, let's talk about success. I want you to define success clearly to your funders. I want you to say your organization is succeeding at, and then explain it right there, right up front. Don't hide your success at the bottom or the middle of your write-up, or worst of all, forget to put it in altogether. I see this happen way too often. You'd be surprised. You're probably looking at me and going, wait, Sybil, I, of course, put this up front, but maybe you're thinking, maybe I don't. How about in the chat? Why don't you guys think about your success? Write down what your organization is doing and think about it in the chat in just one sentence. I love this. We got this helps unite people in all communities of Oregon. Svetlana, oh, that's great.
And now for an ad, but don't go away, my nonprofit friend, because I have so much more to talk to you about related to perfecting your pitch so that you can be the best fundraiser possible.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season, which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune in to my podcast series September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot.
The problem statement. Explain the problem that you want to solve in the world. We're engaged because they describe your problem. And then to solve this problem, our work is essential for the following reasons and list the reasons. All of you, put in your problem statement in the chat. And we can think about that too. Oh, I love it. You're doing it. Woohoo. All right. I'm going to be looking at this, and then I'm going to be talking to you. And then we're going to go through it even more when my presentation is done. Air pollution is the number one threat to human health in the world. Right on, Mary. Okay. Keep them coming. Okay. So just like with your definition of success, all too often you hide your problem statement at the bottom or middle of your write-up, or worst of all, forget to put it in all together. Don't do that. Put it in there right up front. Be proud. All right. Three, your role. Describe your unique role and value proposition that you want to solve. All right. Don't forget to have this as a separate standalone element of your work. Okay. Because a lot of times people think, oh, I might have defined the success or the problem, and that's enough. No. Also, your role. What's your role in this? So, for example, let's say your organization is essential because you're good at, what are you good at? Are you good at communications, media, litigation, human services? You name it, but put it in there. And then your expertise specifically allows you to address the issue you're working on effectively to achieve, and then go back and remind the funder what your definition of success is. Okay, so you guys put in the chat. Keep putting in the chat. What do you think you should define as your role and that kind of thing? And I want to see it. I want to see these key things. I see more new messages here that I want to check out. Here we go. Because there are hundreds of homeless cats and dogs, and our work is essential in saving them from euthanasia, defining loving homes for them. I love that. Love that. All right. Keep it coming. Don't make this mistake about your role. Don't become overly complicated in your description of your role, and don't use acronyms or highfalutin language, okay? A lot of times folks think, oh, well, the funder knows my issue. And usually they, if they're interested in what you're doing, they do sort of know it. But a lot of times they actually are so much more removed from the work you do than you realize, that once you start doing acronyms and fancy language, you lose them. And I'm telling you this, I've made this mistake before too. And I realized, no, take a step back, talk about your role, keep it simple, and that'll be really helpful for you in your fundraising journey. Okay, number four, leverage. Demonstrate how you leverage dollars to ensure your funder's donation will make a difference, okay? And what I mean by this is do something like this. Your support to the funder, you say, your support's necessary at this time because it will leverage X dollars from public and private sources. Funders love to feel like and to know, and not just feel like, but know that the dollar they're giving to you will be magnified by other people's money coming in or public dollars coming in. Okay. And then you want to say, and you also don't want to just sort of leave it at that where your dollar is going to leverage it. You're going to want to say, we have a track record of success at leveraging funds. Your group does. For example, our programs recently leveraged X dollars from public and private funds to support our cause. That is key because that can be really, really impressive for the funder. Okay, everybody, think yourself about what programs have you done where your work has been able to leverage public dollars, where you've been able to really do more there.
Hey, Sybil, I want to jump in. Somebody asked, how do you define leverage funds for the common donor?
I love that. Thank you for asking that. So if you, and let's see who that was, it's Melissa. So thanks, Melissa. Okay, so many donors that I work with do know what leverage funds mean, but let's talk about it in a different way. If you want to say something like match, sometimes when you say your dollar will match somebody else's dollar, that can be a word that you use that is a little clearer for someone. Or you can say 2-for-1 or 3-for-1. If you put $1 in, then we know that your dollar will then incentivize 3 more dollars to come in from the public coffers. But I really like that word match. I think that can be helpful if leverage doesn't make sense. Thanks for that question, Melissa. I appreciate it.
And now for an ad, but don't go away, my nonprofit friend, because I have so much more to talk to you about related to perfecting your pitch so that you can be the best fundraiser possible. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot.
Okay, don't make this mistake. Don't forget to include the leveraging potential of a donation. I have to tell you, almost nobody includes this in their pitch. But when they do, it really can help. When the donor is like, oh my gosh, I'm part of the whole thing here. It's not just me alone. But I also think I'm really going to listen to Melissa, and I think we should say match as well. I like that a lot. Thanks for that. Okay. So,
sorry, Sybil.
Yeah, please.
Before we go on, somebody else has another question. How do you tackle it when you're trying to lock in that first funder?
Ah, great question. Let's go back. Let's go back to the leveraging piece. How do you tackle it when you're talking to that first funder? So usually you have a program that has one funder, but what I want to do, actually, I'm going to address this question when we get to the budget, okay? So if you only have, you're really talking about this with one funder so far, what you want to do is you want to have an overarching budget that includes more money than what you're asking for from that one funder. So you can say, look, we have an overall project budget of $100,000, $50,000, you name it. And you say, you number one funder, I'd like you to put in $5,000, $10,000, because it'll help us then raise the rest of this money. We have ideas of other funders we want to approach. And if you come in first, then you can help us. You will show the other funders that we can make a difference. This kind of funder, this one that comes in first, this is somebody called a launcher funder. And in my other trainings that I do, I talk about the differences and similarities between three funder types. The launcher funder is a very special funder who's in early, in first, And there's lots of other additional tactics I'd love to get into you more about around launcher funders. And it's a little bit outside the scope of this training, but I have a lot of other materials in my other trainings about how to identify those three types of donors and then think about the launcher donor specifically.
Hey everyone, Sybil here. I want to interject that if you're interested in learning more about the differences and similarities between sustainer, campaigner, and launcher funders, check out my website because I've got a special lesson number 2 in my Be Real course called Be Empathetic. And in that lesson, I get into detail there. I have a video and materials to help you work through this piece of it.
Okay, thank you for asking that question. I really appreciate it. So number 5, pitch element, scale. Prove that your work can scale to make a difference at the statewide, regional, or national level. Okay, so I want you to think about this. Our work is gaining traction at the statewide, regional, or national level in the following ways. And you just list those ways, okay? You all think about those and put them in examples in the chat, or just think about them yourself in your notes. Don't make this mistake, though, okay, for scale. Don't overstate your significance at the statewide, regional, or national level. So it's okay if the work you're doing is super local and you don't really know if it will scale. But then you can sort of say, you still bring it up in your pitch, but you can sort of say, here's what I think. If what we do is successful, it could be replicable. If you overstate it, then what happens is if the funder is smart, they're talking to other people in addition to you about your project. And if you overstate it, then and other people start saying, oh, no, it's not that important, blah, 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 you actually could hurt yourself more than help. So be very careful about how you frame scale. Okay, 6, collaborators. Describe your collaborators well so you don't leave money on the table. A lot of times, folks, and I'll give an example in a minute, but they make a mistake of thinking of your partners and collaborators as a competition. And I like this photo because it's like mean girls in high school, you know. That doesn't work here. If you think of your partners as competition, then all of you will make less money. But if you all think of your work together as a joint mission to succeed, I think I've seen it happen over and over. You raise way more money together than you do apart.
Hey everyone, I want to interject here. It is so important that you think about your project and your work in collaboration with your partners. And it's a mindset thing. It is really amazing how much you can do if you think about the work from a place of abundance rather than have a limited mindset. And what I mean by that is if you have a vision and you're working with your partners to accomplish that vision in collaboration, oftentimes I really have seen you can raise way more money altogether. So it really isn't a competitive thing. It's if everyone is rowing in the same direction, you can get even more donors excited about your work. I have a lesson about specifically how to keep your mindset in one of abundance. It's lesson 3 in my Be Real series, and it's for free on my website. I'd love it if you check that out, just to sort of think more about that abundance mindset.
2 people have the same question.
Sure.
What if you work with a small organization that doesn't have a lot of collaborators? Does that hurt the organization as a whole?
Thanks for that question. No, not at all. If you actually don't have a lot of collaborators in the work you're doing, totally, absolutely fine. The thing is, if you do have collaborators, you need to be, I think, very strongly, you need to be sure that you're working with them and talking about how do you run a narrative to funders that explains all the different things that everyone's doing in their niches and think of it as a value add. But definitely, if you're doing the project on your own, don't stress about that piece. But keep your eyes open because as you keep working on your project over the years, there are going to be other collaborators that come in. The more successful you are, the more it's going to be that more and more people are going to be interested. And think of that as a benefit, something that'll help you. Because actually, one thing I do see, Candace, and to the question, over my many, many years of supporting nonprofits in honing their pitch and also helping donors think about this, one of the big challenges I've seen is when an issue becomes more mainstream, the groups that started working on the issue way in the beginning sometimes can get a little so locked in to the old ways and get really sort of see the broadening as something that's taking away from them rather than helping. And what happens there is there's a big tension, and then that actually can hurt everybody in the next steps. I'm not saying this wonderful person who asked the question is in that place. I'm just saying it's something to watch out for a little bit. Thanks. And Candace, was there another question that you saw in the chat?
I think that might have been it.
Keep watching. And anyone, please, please, folks, ask questions and keep working in the chat on some of your ideas here, because this is really helpful. All right. So now let's talk about budget. Demonstrate an effective and convincing budget in your pitch. Our budget is X, the entire budget for the organization. And then you're requesting Y from you to achieve success at, and then you're circling back to that success statement that you put right in the top. Okay.
Hello, everyone. This is Sybil. I'm interjecting here on the budget piece because I feel like it didn't, my overview in the Zoom training didn't translate very well for the podcast listener, for you when you're just listening in, because you don't have the benefit of the visual slide. So I do have a much more in-depth training on budget specifically that I am going to publish in my podcast series, so you'll get that. But I'm also going to add in the show notes to this training my specific budget template you can download. It was very popular when I first sent it out to my email subscribers, and so I think you'll really like it. So check that out for more detail on the budget now, and then definitely tune in to my budget training that I have that's in much more depth on this issue.
So the reason that I'm emphasizing all this is, I'm going to go to the next slide, because so many people make this mistake. In your pitch, you include only the amount you want from that specific funder, and you don't include your overall budget, and you don't include the project budget. This is a huge mistake, because what can happen is, if the funder is super interested in your work and you've only included one amount that you think they might jump on, if they're excited, then they'll fund that. But if they don't know your overall budget, then they might not. If they knew their overall budget, they might fund more than what you're asking. And also, they might have friends and colleagues that they can recruit to help fund the rest of your project, right? They'll be like, oh my gosh, you've got a transportation project that's $100,000 and you're asking me for 10, but you need 90 more. How can I help? I can get them really excited. So don't forget to do that. That's key.
Sybil? Okay.
Yes.
We have one question. How do I gauge what an appropriate ask is?
For an amount?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I love these questions. Keep them coming. Okay. So this is a tricky one. So essentially, the first thing is ask. What I find when I get pitched, too many people just don't ask, and then they end up guessing, and then they can ask too much for too little. It isn't more of an art than a science, right? Okay. So first, ask. Second, if you're talking to a person who has a private family foundation, their information of what grants they've given in the past and how big or small they are on average, you can find that out. It's public information in the 990s. So you can find that out. And so that can help you. Okay, if you look at a private family foundation and they tend to give away grants in the range of $10,000 to $30,000, you sort of know that's their comfort zone for how much. Okay, so first, try to ask. Second, do the research if it's a private family foundation. Third, if it's a donor that doesn't have a private family foundation, so you can't look up the history, but maybe you know friends or colleagues, or you generally can figure out their net worth, and there it is possible to figure those kind of things out, then you can figure out then an amount that might be good based on how much their friends say they've given to other folks or other things. You want to be very careful here. This is where you tread carefully. When you're talking to an individual donor, the best thing to do is to try to straight up ask. Now, the other thing I want to say about this, because it's sparking some thoughts in me, because it is really tricky. And then this is another thing with this budget item. This is why I'm doing a special training on each one of these seven things, because here's some other things I want to talk to you about with budget. The other thing to think about here is, you can really get in trouble, because you can, if you ask for too much, then you might get your whole pitch thrown out. If you ask for too little, then you might leave money on the table. So that's why you need to be sure you ask. If it's a private family foundation, look up what they're comfortable with. And if it's a donor, within the bounds of decency, like be sure you're not getting too snoopy, but try to find out like what is their comfort level and who have they given to in the past, and try to ask them straight up because that is the best way to do it.
Hello, everyone. This is Sybil interjecting. This marks the end of the official training. I'm going to offer you just a little clip of one of my favorite back and forths during the Q&A that we had. And then I will have a few more comments at the end of this podcast before we conclude for today.
And I saw somebody else with their hand raised before. At least it's not like you not to raise your hand.
I know. It's unusual that my hand isn't up, but I've been furiously taking notes. I really appreciate it, Sybil. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elise. Do you have any questions for me, though? Because you've been one of my longer-term students here and been really, really helpful with, you've been helpful with your questions as I develop my program.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't have a question right now, but for everyone who's new on the call, I just wanted to let you know in person, I used some of your techniques recently to raise additional funds for a website project that Oregon Shores is working on. We're building a brand new website right now. And when we first started the website rebuild, we hadn't anticipated this cool mapping feature that we now have the opportunity to do. So I used a lot of your techniques, reapproached some of our donors to raise more funds, and raised an additional $10,500.
Oh,
so
yay!
The techniques really work, and I appreciate being part of these trainings.
Oh my gosh, Elise, I didn't know that outcome. You are giving
it
me the inspiration. Yay!
Yeah.
You give me the inspiration to keep going, man. That's great.
Yeah. So
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks, Elise. I appreciate that.
I hope you all enjoyed that training. I certainly enjoyed doing it. And now I'm going to edit. I'm busy at work editing the next 7 trainings that I did. So what I'm doing is I'm condensing my live trainings into a shorter podcast-friendly version. And it's just been super fun to do. So I hope you enjoyed it. And like I said before, if you're a donor, please share this training series with any of your favorite nonprofits to support them in honing their pitch so that they can raise even more money for the cause you care about. And if you're a leader in the nonprofit community and you enjoyed my training, please share this training and the information about it with any of your other friends that you think might benefit. All of my trainings are free. And my podcasts are free. My trainings on my website are free. Check out www.doyourgood.com for all my information. And I'm also on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, so I'm easy to reach. Thanks a lot for your interest and have a wonderful day. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com. and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.